This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. I'm dancing all by myself today. Dean's off doing other things, so it's just me, and I'd love to hear from you. Of course, you know the numbers. I'm sure you've all added these into your speed dial, but I'll repeat them just for those of you that haven't. Because, of course, I want to hear what's going on in your garden. I'm going to tell you in a minute what's going on in mine. So if you're in the local GTA calling area, it's 416-360-0740. If you're outside the local GTA calling area, anywhere in Ontario, toll-free 866-740-4740. That's pretty simple. So what's going on? Well, of course, it's really spring. I mean, the buds are busting out at my place. The tulips, the daffodils are all blooming like crazy. Elliot's had to go out to mow the lawn twice already. So things are growing. And of course, the real spring feel happens when the migrating birds come back home. So this week, we've seen a couple of Baltimore Orioles, two males. Haven't seen the females yet. I think maybe the males arrive first. Bright, bright orange. Can't miss them. Can't mix them up with a cardinal. Cardinals are bright red. Orioles are bright orange. And hummingbirds. The hummingbirds are back as well. And they're flitting and flying all over the place. So, yep, things are hopping in the outdoor world here. It's my favorite time of year. Today's kind of an overcast, damp day. Things are wet. But it's all right. Spring rain. We never, ever complain about rain here where we live. It's very dry in Prince Edward County where I live. Very dry. Now, not so much in the spring, but our summers tend to be hot and sunny and dry. So we're always happy for whatever rain is ever going to fall. We even practice rain dances in between. I've given you the numbers, but here are a couple of upcoming events. Because again, it's spring in the horticultural world. Many of the groups are meeting, and of course, it is plant sale time as well. So tomorrow, for those of you in the Toronto area, the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society has a super plant sale, not just a regular plant sale. This is super. This is where members bring plants from home, special plants that they're willing to share with others. Sometimes, I'm not sure if this group, but sometimes groups will actually buy in some plants for plant sales from, you know, wholesale nurseries, etc. So tomorrow from 12 to 3:30 at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, 777 Lawrence Avenue East. That's at Leslie in the Floral Hall, which is a big, huge room. So there must be lots of plants and many, many special offerings is what I was told. So that's a great place for the Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society. They're a niche specialty group, but you know whatever they're selling is going to be tough and hardy and work well if you've got some kind of, you know, circumstances in your garden that need tough plants. Monday, May 12th. Coming up soon, the Agent Court Garden Club will be meeting 7:30 p.m. Everyone, of course, is welcome to learn from member John Pugh. He is doing a presentation on the unusual vegetables that he grows for winning awards at things like the Canadian National Exhibition. Like he I wonder if he grows things for the one in the fall. Okay, like brain's going to be one to hold that the big show where the big, really big vegetables go there. But nevertheless, John, I guess, is a vegetable grower. He's been growing unusual stuff for a long, long time, and he's won tons of awards. So there will be a flower show and John with the Agent Court Garden Club meeting at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd. Then also the Burlington Hort Society meeting May 14th. They as well have a plant sale coming up on May 24th. David Wood is presenting Attracting Birds to Your Garden. So I guess plants and shelter and water and all the important things that Paul Oliver talks about when he comes on the show. 6:30 p.m., Burlington Senior Center, 2285 New Street in Burlington. The plant sale, of course, will be held at the North Burlington Baptist Church, which is on Walker's Line, from 9 to 3 on the 24th. So for more information, BurlingtonHS, Burlington Hort Society.com. And one more coming up Thursday, May 15th, 1 to 4 p.m., the Milne House will be presenting a flower show, and it will be gorgeous. It'll be a knock-your-socks-off event. The Milne House is a bunch of, you know, very, very keen garden horticultural floral design people. So beautiful flower show at the Toronto Botanical Gardens in the Floral Hall, 1 to 4 p.m. The theme this year, because every year there's a theme for the show, is floral artistry. It'll be the show is going to be featuring garden specimens, but also houseplants and floral designs, interpreting the theme floral artistry. So May 15th, 1 to 4 p.m. It is a fundraiser for the education group at Toronto Botanical Gardens. So Milne House puts on a pretty nice show there. All right. We got a few people on the line, which is always great. I will just quickly say the numbers. Well, all right, here's the numbers quickly, and then let's see what's going on in Scarborough, because Paul's on the line. Phone numbers, 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. My question is, I put some plants and shrubs and bushes in about 3 years ago, and I realized that a couple of them need to be moved. One is a hydrangea, and the other one is that prickly purple bush, and so forth. Can I do that, and when can I do it, and what are the things I should do to mitigate any of the stress on the plant?
Okay, great question. Okay, so the purple prickly one is probably a barberry. Yeah. And so when you move that one, you're going to want to do it when the weather's cool enough that you're wearing long sleeves and, you know, leather gauntlets, preferably. They are very, very prickly. I personally use two times that's best for transplanting. Like right now, spring is a great time. Or if you can't do it in the next week or so, then wait until the fall, wait until late August, early September. When you do your transplanting, whether it's spring or fall, and personally, I would do it now if you can, because right now is when our hydrangeas are all cut back nice and short. So they're easier to deal with. And doesn't matter what kind of hydrangea it is, you will have done some pruning back. And when you move these plants, the most important thing when transplanting is know where you're going. Prepare the hole in advance. So dig the hole in advance. Remember, a bigger hole is better. It's not so much a deeper hole, but a wider, always a bigger hole is better. Because you want to, when you move these plants, you want to move with as many roots attached as you can possibly manage. Plus, you want the soil to stay on the roots. So it's nice right now. It's been nice and moist. The soil is moist. The soil will tend to stick to the roots in a nice ball. And depending on the size of the plants, you can always prune back, because remember, you are going to leave roots behind. We try to leave it as few as possible behind, but you're going to end up leaving some behind. So you're going to prepare your hole. Depending on the quality of your soil, you're going to have some supplemental soil, you know, bag of triple mix or composted manure or something standing by, because that's always a great amendment. The other thing is, so you're going to dig, obviously, a circle, like a moat around the plant. You're going to go out as to the drip line if you can. So, you know, it's what we can actually carry in terms of root balls is important, but you're going to, you know, and then dig up under. If you're going very far or there's any delay, sometimes I'll use an old sheet or a piece of burlap to wrap that root ball just to keep that soil on the roots. Or if it's a pretty quick thing, you can, you know, with your shovel, lift that soil and plant together, get it over to the new spot into the ground. Now you're going to want to plant a little bit higher because it's going to sink. So bottom line is you want that soil level to be the same for when the plant settles in from where it was. So no deeper for sure, a little bit higher and you'll find it'll settle in and be just fine. Nice, good quality soil in the hole, you know, well-drained, fertile soil. And it's up to you, but often I'll use bone meal, like a handful of bone meal into the planting hole. So that's a pure phosphorus product. It is from the abattoirs. It's been baked, cooked, because there was some concerns at one time about mad cow disease and bone meal, but it's all completely sterile. And a handful of bone meal into the hole, which that phosphorus, of course, which is from bones, is what the roots will respond to because phosphorus encourages root growth. Sometimes people will just go to the store and buy plant start or one of the transplanter fertilizers, which is the same idea, but it's a synthetic form. So up to you. Always a nice idea, though, to get some phosphorus around those roots because you have done some damage when you move the plant. And then a thorough watering, even if it's pouring rain, a thorough watering, and you're good to go.
And can I just ask, can I do it now? Because somebody else told me I should wait a couple of more weeks for it to warm up a bit more.
No.
Okay.
No, I understand why somebody said that, because it's got to do with the soil temperature.
Yeah.
Because the roots won't actually start growing and really grow until the soil reaches a certain temperature, which is why we do a lot of planting and transplanting in the fall, because the soil is perfect. Right now, the soil is probably still a bit cool, but it's okay. As long as you do a good job, plant the plant in the spot you want it, as the soil starts to warm up, the roots will start to grow. So it's not a panic. You can do. I find the more dormant a plant is, the better when it comes to moving them around.
Okay, and for the hydrangea, should I cut it now, prune it back, and then transplant it, or should I transplant it and then prune it back?
It's easier to the smaller the plant, the easier it is to handle it.
Okay.
So I would cut it first.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your call. Good luck with that. All right, we've just gone a little bit over from our very first break, so let's say hello to some of our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. Well, we've got a few calls lined up, so let's get right to our callers. We've got Doreen on the line. Good morning, Doreen.
Good morning, Charlie. We have
What's going on at your place?
In what? Our lawn.
Oh.
We have the worst looking lawn we've ever had, and the granddaughter asked last July to be married on the 27th of September on our lawn.
Oh,
we have
my
big brown patches with the snow, and we did kill dandelions last fall, and we've got all these brown patches.
Huh.
It's a huge lawn.
My. And it has been a good lawn in the past? It just suddenly,
yes.
This is the worst?
Reasonably nice. Not as thick as it should have been. We've overseeded it, but we ran into trouble. We were going to spray dandelions, and my husband got both legs broke while doing the job.
Oh. Well.
So
when
you got done last spring then. But
right.
We have all these brown. We have lots of grass seed, but we don't know what to do. We've been dethatching it.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So we dethatch when we have thatch. So thatch is dead grass. It's a layer of dead grass on the surface of the soil, so down between the grass blades. And thatch limits moisture and nutrient from getting down to your living lawn plants. So if it's a thin lawn, you probably don't have a lot of thatch. But it's an interesting idea because, of course, it's also a form of aeration. So it's opening up the soil surface so that the roots of the living plants can get the air that they require and the moisture and the nutrient. So what are you going to do now with a wedding coming, you said, in September? That does give a fair amount of time to get things sorted out. It's funny that you're calling about a lawn because I was joking with Elliot, my partner, just last night, saying, honey, you should come on the show and you can share your tips, because we have an absolutely beautiful lawn. He's pretty meticulous. He has taken very good care of this lawn. So at this point, what are you going to do? If it's a really big lawn, Doreen, you are going to need some help. Couple of things you're going to need. One is a truckload of soil, of quality soil. So whether it's triple mix or black earth, something like a topsoil, quality soil, you're going to need to get a layer of that. Well, first you're going to rake out everything that's dead, and you're just going to use a fan rake. You're going to rake all the dead stuff out. Now you're going to have some bare patches. And it's also, again, invigorating, lifting up some of the dead stuff, rake out, compost what comes up, stand back, look at your lawn. Think about, you need a minimum of a half an inch of quality soil on top of your entire lawn. So minimum of a half an inch to an inch. So, because at the end of the day, you want the whole thing level. So you want it so that, you know, when your wedding party is walking in their maybe stiletto heels, they are not, you know, tripping and falling into, you know, holes made by whoever and whatever. So soil out onto the lawn, of course, that gets raked in. Doesn't take a ton of raking. And that's where you use a flat rake instead of a fan rake. And you flip it over so you don't even use the tines into the soil. You use the flat side of the rake and you move that soil all over the lawn. That will all get taken down with rain, etc. Then you get out your grass seed. You pretend you're feeding the chickens and you broadcast the quality seed and hopefully fairly fresh seed into the areas where it's very, very thin. And then you stay on top of keeping those areas moist in order for that seed to grow. So it's a 2 weeks roughly for the seed to even germinate. So it's making sure it's not soggy wet, but always moist. And once it starts to grow, again, keeping it moist, might be watering every day, might be watering every 3 days, depending on temperature, et cetera. And just that's where you're gonna start. For your purposes with a big event coming, I would certainly consider some fertilizer, but wait until you've done the top dressing and the overseeding. So that's the soil and the seed, and the seed has started to grow. And then let's talk about a summer fertilizer for your lawn. And it'll be like a turf builder, a sort of a summer / late spring fertilizer, which again, you'll use your spreader and walk that lawn, walk it in two different directions, spread that fertilizer exactly the way it's supposed to be spread, you know, the right amount. And all of a sudden you're poor husband is going to be out mowing every 2 days once things get growing, because the fertilizer will really encourage growth and you're going to want to stay on top of the cutting of the lawn.
Should you ever roll a lawn?
No. I know it used to be that was a thing. I'm not a fan of rolling lawns because you are compacting the soil when you roll lawns. And when you compact the soil, you just make it harder for the roots to grow. That's why I don't even like rototilling, because again, we mess up the structure of the soil. Let the soil be soil. Let the plants grow. Yes, they can get bumpy and lumpy, and that's where that load of soil you're bringing in is going to fill in the dips and the valleys so that you don't have lumps and bumps everywhere. It is a fair amount of work, and maybe you want to hire a couple of local kids to help with it and get it done. You know, just get it done before it gets too hot. You want to get the grass seed, because dandelions are starting to flower at my house now. And you want to also stay on top of not letting any weeds move in. The thicker and happier your lawn, the better.
Yellow with dandelions.
Yes. So a thick lawn will not get a lot of dandelions because there's no place for the seeds to drop in between. That's what I wanted Elliot to come on the show and tell everybody, was how our lawn is really thick. So thick it's like a carpet, and very few weeds grow in it now because they can't get started.
What about aerating?
Yes, great idea. If you've got a big lawn, then it's a go to your local Home Depot or Rona, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a core aerator, like it pulls little cores.
Core.
Perfect.
Yes.
Wow.
Core.
Fancy. Okay. So what you would do is you're going to do that raking I talked about first.
Right.
Then you're going to aerate. So raking, aerating, soil, seed, water.
Perfect.
Send pictures of the wedding.
Right on. Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks so much, Doreen. I love it. I can just see it too. I can just see the panic as you're thinking about a wedding party on your lawn when it's looking crummy. Well, don't forget all the flowers too, Doreen. All right. We have to listen. We're going to have some very important messages and we'll be right back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. I'm just sending Owen. So remember, when you phone in, you're talking to Owen. I just sent him a picture of our sunset from last night over the Bay of Quinte. I was at a friend's house for dinner, and it was red at night. Sailor's delight. Such a gorgeous sunset. And right now, it's hard to believe how warm it was yesterday because it's about 8 degrees here at my place. But perfect for spring. This I love a cool spring because, of course, the tulips and all the flowers on the bulbs will last much longer if we don't have hot summer weather in spring. And magnolias, the forsythia is still blooming. So we've got all kinds of spring color happening, and it will last even longer in the cool and the damp conditions. Quick repeat of the phone numbers, 416-360-0740, and outside the GTA, anywhere in Ontario, 866-740-4740. And we have Jean on the line. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. And please, and
you're calling from Newmarket. So carry on.
Okay. I want to ask John if he's listening to phone in for old time's sake. I particularly enjoyed you and him talking together.
He probably is listening. John from Mississauga with his bambinellas.
I don't know, but he's John. please, I was given some lilac trees, and they're about 6 feet tall. Now, the relatives did what they wanted. They came in and they planted them, and there was no preparation. And what do I do? And can I cut them back after they bloom?
Mm-hmm. Wait, so you were given, like, they're in pots or they're not, or are they in the ground?
No, well, they're in the pot. They're in the ground now, but they came in pots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've planted them in a sunny location and they're about 6 feet tall now and they're going to bloom. Do you have any idea what kind of lilacs they are?
None. I just said thank you, and it was just last week they planted them, okay?
Okay. Okay, so the reason I ask is because all lilacs grow fairly quickly. They are a pretty hardy plant, but there's many different kinds of lilacs, and they do grow differently depending on what variety or even what species they are. So with a lilac, they're not usually, are these really trees or are these more shrubs? Is there one stem or multi?
One.
Okay. Are trees, single stem. And then like, were they trained as trees? So they got a bunch of branches up on the top?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, there are.
So that's so that's kind of a more formal, like a lollipop shape basically. And that's not that unusual, though it could be. Many different kinds of lilacs are trained to do that. So lots of sun, well-drained soil, newly planted. So you'll make sure they don't suffer for lack of water for the next, first growing season, particularly after they bloom, get out a ladder if necessary. And yes, sharp pruners, remove the flowers once they're done. So follow the flower down the stem, and at the bottom of that little branch, there'll be green leaves. So you're going to cut the entire flower off down to where there's green leaves. The reason you're going to do that is because the plant will set seeds and put a lot of energy into creating seeds that you are never going to grow, which makes no sense. You don't want the plant to put a lot of energy into seed creation. You want the plant to put energy into growing roots and growing, leaves and stems. So remove the flowers, and that will be probably in June sometime, and just stay on top of it. And then look at the plant in the fall. Well, actually, not even in the fall. When you're doing the flower removal, look at the plant. Make sure there's no branches that are touching each other, that are creating damage with rubbing together. Try and make sure there's no branches growing in the direction they shouldn't grow. So you want your branches to grow to the outside of the plant, not towards the inside. So when you're doing your flower removal is the time to do some cleaning up on these plants, making sure that they're all, you know, happy, healthy. Anything that's bent, broken, dead, diseased, cut it out.
Thank you. How about fertilizer?
Newly planted plants, I don't usually fertilize. As I mentioned back with Paul, who was transplanting, I will use bone meal or a high phosphorus fertilizer, or even something like a mycorrhiza-based, I use something called Root Rescue that will encourage root growth. But no, when you first plant a plant, the last thing you want to do is make it grow a bunch of leaves and flowers. That will come. For now, it's all about the roots. So no, good quality soil, some phosphorus if you wish, but nothing else until next year. Next year, you can fertilize with an all-purpose.
Thank you. And I'll be back. I have another question. Goodbye.
Thanks, Jean. You're the best. That's a really good point, though, Jean brings up, because Jean not only loves John, but we love Jean. The mantra, call early, which everybody's been doing. Call often. That's what Jean's going to do. And one question per call. So that's the mantra. And let's keep going. We've got another Jean on the line calling in from Chatham. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. I have a lot of daffodils and tulips that have multiplied, and I would like to transplant them into places that I know where I'd like them to go. And can I do that now? The flowers have all been cut in.
And oh, are they finished? Are your flowers finished in Chatham? Yeah.
Just a few tulips have still got their flowers on. We've got buds on our peony bush.
Oh, wow. Yeah, my peony is about an inch up. Yeah, so you're in the banana belt part of Ontario, sunny Chatham. Well, good for you. Way ahead. You're a good 2 weeks ahead of me in terms of weather and garden. Can you transplant them now? Yes, you can. As a matter of fact, you probably want to transplant them before it gets too hot and well, you still know exactly where they are and what colors they are and all that important stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not usually very pretty when we transplant bulbs, because when you dig them up, the soil tends to fall off the actual bulbs. And then we take them to where we want them. And then they're limp. They sort of fall down. They don't look great, but it still works. Leave the green on if you can, because the green leaves, the green stems will still be providing some photosynthesis and some, energy to the bulbs. Because once you move them, you want roots to grow, and they will grow as the soil warms up. The other time you could consider transplanting is when they're completely dormant. Now that's a great time to do a transplanting. That would be more like September. The challenge is you have to find out, you've got to know where they are. And right. It's hard to dig them. It's hard. You end up putting a shovel right through a bulb when you can't see where they are. So now would be not optimal, but certainly doable. Optimal would be September. But, like I said, it's got that limiting factor of you're kind of gardening blind.
I'd like to do them now so I know where to put them and where there isn't other flowers.
Exactly.
So I'm going to try it.
Okay, yeah. Good idea. Yeah, like I said, they won't look great because they won't probably even stand up. They might, though. You never know. That if you do keep some soil around the bulbs, it's more likely that they will, remain erect and continue to do their normal. Because remember what spring bulbs do. They provide beautiful flowers. But once the flowers are done, it's just a slow dying down of the foliage. And that's the least pretty part of the bulb season. But nevertheless, we have to let it happen. We have to let those green leaves look pretty tattered and not very attractive as they yellow and, pale green, and they all sort of fall down. And at some point we get frustrated and just cut out all the leaves. But it's at least a month of letting that happen.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. I will try it.
Thanks, Jean. Thanks for calling. Wow, this is great. Owen, you're doing a fine job. Owen just keeps bringing the calls in.
It is a busy, busy morning in the garden world. Like, what can I say?
It sure is. All over Ontario, I might point out. Let's go to Toronto. We've got Mary on the line. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, I planted a plum tree last year, actually in a pot where I bought it. In the ground. I put it just in the ground with the whole pot in. Then over the winter with the bad weather, it almost took off the half tree. All the branches got all broken off. And now there are sticks on it. Starting to come, and there are sticks on it now. They look like branches, but they're like just skinny sticks, but they look really good. I don't know if they're in time going to be really branches like they're supposed to be, or what I should do.
Okay, if so
what should I do?
Okay, so Mary, in the winter you said there was damage. How did that damage? Was it from wind or ice, or how did the damage happen?
I don't know. It just like seemed to slice the tree.
Sliced.
Seemed to slice the tree like a knife, you know.
Oh,
just
wait,
whole,
so...
The whole, all the branches came out right up, right, sliced up.
And but how...
I'm from this
how,
end.
Okay. All right, so I'm a bit confused how the, like, who, what damaged the tree. For now, it's in the ground. It was a happy tree when it went in the ground last year. So what you're going to do is a couple things. If it's a plum tree...
It's still in the pot, but
oh, it's in the pot.
I planted in a hole in the soil, so it's not really planted. It's just put
sure.
in.
Okay, so it is time. If you want this plant to survive, it needs to get out of the pot into the ground. Any time now is perfect. Obviously, if it's a fruit tree, a plum, then it needs to go in a spot where you've got a minimum of 6 hours of sun, direct sun. Every day when the sun shines on that plant. So lots of sun, preferably lots of air circulation. Fruit trees have a tendency to become infested with insects and diseases when they sit in poor air circulation and low light conditions. So make sure you've got that ability, a spot in your yard, get it out of the pot, check the roots, make sure the roots look alive, spread them out if necessary so that they're going to grow out from the trunk, plant at the same level that it's growing now in the pot. You know, we've talked about using bone meal earlier in the show into the hole when you're transplanting, using, some product that will amend the soil like manure or triple mix just to make sure it's a quality soil. And with fruit trees, be aware that you need to spray them every single spring and sometimes even in the fall with something called dormant spray. Currently, that plum tree is probably still dormant, meaning there's no leaves on it. So dormant spray, you pick up at your local garden center. It's oil and lime sulfur mixed together with water into a spray machine of one kind or spray bottle. And you spray the bark and the branches on the tree before the leaves come out to control diseases and insects that might have overwintered on the plant. So that, and then you're going to do that every spring forever and ever and ever with fruit trees. Everyone should be right on that now because that's not on a rainy day necessarily, but this is the dormant spray time of year. So you're going to do that. And if it's just sitting there, not a lot of growth is happening, you're going to get out your pruners and you're going to prune the tips of every branch, just a half an inch or thereabouts on every little branch you mentioned that's sticking out. And by pruning the tips, if that tree is alive, buds will break out. You will be forcing buds to grow if the plant is alive. Like if you're concerned that it's not alive, you know, maybe don't even bother planting it in the ground. Just give a whole little tip pruning to it now and see if buds start to swell. If they're swelling, you know, it's alive, get it planted.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yes, I just want to make sure. Do you think they're going to be the sticks, like they're really the good? You have little leaves and they have like little as if they have little, I don't know what you call them.
Buds. There's little bumps like buds, and buds.
Well, I just want to make sure if they will develop in time in strong branches like you're supposed to.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Remember the other mantra of gardening, patience, my friend, patience. It'll take a few years, but yeah, no, it'll be fine. It's just make sure it's alive and get it in the ground.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Report back. I expect to hear about the plum harvest. Maybe not this year, but maybe next year that you'll be able to get off that plant. Plums are pretty good for growing. All right. Listen, we are going to take one more short break. Be right back after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. It's Charlie Dobbin talking gardening, and I've got all kinds of great people asking all kinds of great questions. Elizabeth is on the line. Good morning from Toronto.
Well, good morning. And I have a male and two female holly bushes. They're mm-hmm. against a wire fence, and the females are expanding. Putting on a little extra weight that I don't want. I'm wondering when and where I should prune them.
Is this some evergreen holly or deciduous holly?
They have the red berries.
Yes, but do they have leaves on them right now?
Yes.
Oh, they do have leaves?
They have the leaves all year.
Okay, so they are not deciduous. They are evergreen. Yeah, okay, just yeah. checking. Right. Yeah. You can prune, like I would probably prune now with the big female, fat females. The thing you want to do is you want to try and not shear them. Like you don't want to make them round balls, right?
Right.
I'd be inclined, like usually we don't have to trim holly because holly just grows so slowly. Obviously look for anything that's dead or broken or diseased.
Yes.
Like I was saying to Mary, or to Jean, just, you know, check for branches that are growing in the wrong direction, growing to the inside of the plant as opposed to outside. Of course, you're wearing gloves and long sleeves to do all this because those leaves can be a little bit spiny. I would do it before, like no new growth has shown up yet, right?
No.
Good. Yeah. So that's why you're going to do it now. And of course, after you've removed the dead, the diseased, the broken, the crisscrossing, then it's a matter of looking at each branch and just taking it back, remembering that, you know, this plant grows, 3-4 inches a year, and you don't want to have to do this every year. So go back. You don't want to do anything too radical on a holly, like cut it right back, but certainly you can bring it back by a third overall. But like I said, just avoid that shearing round shape. Like each branch, go back to where there is another branch coming out, or, you know, back to a leaf basically that will grow out to the outside of the plant.
Very similar to lilac trees.
Exactly. And you will obviously be cutting off what would have been some flower buds. So you won't get as many berries this year because the tips had a whole bunch of flower buds that you're going to be removing, but that's okay. It'll all work out the following year.
I had a huge amount of berries this year, but of course it depends on the weather too, does it not?
It does, for sure. Mm-hmm. We have milder winters and not so mild winters. That has a big, big impact. And remember, any pruning we do is with sharp pruners, number one, and on a dry day. Never prune when it's damp or raining because we are wounding the plant and we want that wound to heal. So in order for that to happen, the plant, it's got to be dry, sunny, nice sharp tools.
But it can be, about today's good because it's not going to rain here in Toronto. But it will, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh,
but even if it's wet after I prune it?
That's fine. Yeah, yeah. Just you want a good sort of 12 hours of dryness after you've done your pruning.
Okay.
So it's not raining in Toronto today?
No.
Oh, there you go. It's I guess it's damp where I am.
Yeah, well, but not raining.
All right. All right. Good luck with that, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Marvelous. Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, look who's back on the line. Jean is joining us again. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, and I am very proud of my orchard. I have 6 apple trees, and I want to know if I should fertilize them. They're about 3 years old, and they're now 3 feet, and I don't expect any apple pie soon. But we sprayed them when they were dormant, and now I've never fertilized them. Mm. Should I?
You know what? I don't think I've ever fertilized anything at my house. I've been here in 5 years, but I planted everything into high quality soil. So when we're planting, if we make sure it's good quality soil, then nature pretty much takes care of itself. When you fertilize, you're really going to push growth. So, you know, you want to get those little 3-foot trees up to 6 feet tall, then for sure, an all-purpose fertilizer. There's liquid, you know, mix it up in a watering can, the blue stuff, you know, the blooms. Like, remember, so many fertilizers are specialty fertilizers, but you don't need a specialty fertilizer for a fruit tree. You just need something that encourages flowers, because ultimately it's from the flowers that you'll get some fruit.
Every time, Charlie, or just once to fertilize?
If I'm doing any fertilizing, I do it in the spring and only the spring. And remember, we don't do, unless we do a late, late fall fertilizing, which is a possibility. Research has shown that if we do put fertilizer around our trees in November, that those trees actually access that fertilizer in the spring. So these are established trees. These are not newly planted things. So there's that option too. Generally, I don't use the blue mix-up stuff with landscape plants. I'll use a granular fertilizer, and that's broadcasting on the surface of the soil. And that, again, it's either spring or fall. Just once a year is all you need.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thanks for asking. Yeah, you're making me think of a whole bunch of things, but we will. Okay, so we've got our final little breakaway here, and we'll be right back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. That's so many things happening here. I'm just remembering, again, a special welcome to our newest friends and gardeners in the Owen Sound and Grey Bruce areas. That's 92.3 FM Zoomer Radio up in cottage country, sort of, or at least up in the escarpment. It's a very pretty part of Ontario. For now, though, let's see what's going on in Aurora. Zoraida is on the line. Good morning, Zoraida.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm okay. I am just concerned about moss growing in my patio stones. Someone suggested that I use bleach on it. I'm kind of hesitant.
Right. So, the thing is, moss are a form of a plant, and it's growing. So you want to kill the moss if you don't like the moss growing on your pavers. So bleach will kill. There's no question. There's always been a bunch of different products out there. Do you have any plants that would be impacted by, like, you know, ornamental chosen plants that would be impacted by bleach going onto the pavers?
No.
Okay, it's like there's no lawn right
going up into my backyard.
Okay. Is there lawn right up to the patio?
Yes.
Okay. So you start, if you really want to get rid of moss, there's a couple of things you can do. So first of all, you just, you know, sweep the whole patio, remove all the furniture. And yes, bleach, a 10 to 15% bleach and water solution in a bucket. You pour that over the moss, let it sit for a few minutes, and then with a stiff broom, you really work, you know, really stiff bristles, you work and agitate that bleach down into the moss and it will loosen it. But of course, you want to be careful to not loosen all the sand that the moss is growing in. Then you rinse, obviously, with clean, fresh water and let everything dry out. You might want to replace the sand that you've perhaps disturbed with your agitation of removing the moss. Sometimes people will use a power washer to try and get the moss gone. Personally, I kind of like moss. I don't remove mine. So vinegar, 1-to-1 vinegar and water. I'd use cleaning vinegar, but of course that, be careful to not get any of this stuff on your lawn because it'll kill your lawn, right? Mm-hmm. So vinegar and water, 1-to-1 solution. Baking soda is considered something that you actually sprinkle it directly onto the moss, and on wet moss will start to kill it. None of it's going to just like die right before your very eyes. You're still going to have to work at getting that moss out of there.
Okay. All righty. You have given me 3 or 4 alternatives, right?
Yeah. And remember, to avoid moss growing, the best thing to do is make sure, of course, that your patio is open and airy, getting sunshine. You know, if there's trees, a canopy of tree over top, maybe consider raising the canopy a bit. Just the lighter and brighter our patios are, the less moss grows, really. Mm. So, and sealing the pavers, which is a product that's specific to the company that produced the pavers, will also help lower moss growth. And again, that joint sand in between, again, is an environment that nothing really grows in, because not many plants want to grow in pure sand. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for the call. Oh, my. We're almost out of time. We have Barb on the line. She's a first-time caller from, I can't read it, Paisley. Hey, all the way from Paisley. Good morning, Barb.
Good morning.
You deserve garden wings for your first call, and I think Owen's got some chimes for you. Oh. Woo! Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
Don't be a stranger. What's going on?
I have 2 blueberry bushes that I've had in the ground for about 5 years, but they don't produce any blueberries.
Do they get flowers?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So you won't get blueberries, like you won't get fruit if you don't get flowers, right?
Right.
So how do they look in terms of plants? Are they bushy? Like, are they tall or bushy? How are they growing?
They're about 1 foot tall.
Okay. And are these domestic cultivated blueberries? Like you bought these plants at a garden center?
I did. Yes.
Okay. And did you remember the names of them at all? Did you keep tags? No.
I have. All right. Probably if I looked at the tag, I don't know whether it's still on, but they were, I can't remember now. It's so long ago.
Okay. So the blueberries are plants that have very specific requirements. And one thing we do is we say, okay, where do they grow? Like, where are their wild blueberries? If you've seen them growing in the wild, you say, what are those conditions? And I need to mimic them at my house. So go up into the Shield, central Ontario, and very, very thin soil, full of lots of spruce trees that drop needles all the time. And we will find blueberries naturally growing in and around dappled sun, dappled shade, very, very well drained. Like I say, thin soil, very acidic, low pH, because the soil is created from the spruce needles that, like I say, fall all the time. So in your garden, you need to mimic that. You need to make sure these plants are in part day sun, part day shade. You've got to make sure that they are in a well-drained soil, no clay-based soil for blueberries. And you need to get yourself a little pH meter or a way to test the pH of your soil. And then you need to lower your pH so that it gets down to the right, about a 6 or 5.8, something like that. It's going to be sort of your perfect pH. So you really have to bring it down from where it is now, which is probably very neutral.
Okay.
Once you do that, you should get flowers.
Now, I tried the test using the soil and vinegar.
Oh, no. Vinegar will kill the plants. No vinegar.
No.
We
no,
don't use vinegar. No, if you want a lower pH, you're going to use something. Yeah, no, if you want a lower pH, you're going to use sulfur. And sulfur is a nutrient. It is a required nutrient. And it is available in a box called soil acidifier. But you'll also find it in a box called aluminum sulfate. So you're going to follow directions on a box of sulfur-based product to modify your pH. All right?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good luck with that. Who doesn't love blueberries? I don't blame you for wanting to try and grow them, but they can be challenging. You have to be really, really on to keeping them the way they should be. I have one rhododendron, and actually I flashed on that when we were just talking about fertilizing, and I just put aluminum sulfate around my rhododendron. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Owen. See y'all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.